Canty and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Guests are going to join us on the Goodyear Hotline, Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. Jumpstart your new year with Body Armor Light, the low-calorie sports drink hydrating your active lifestyle. Shop now at retailers nationwide. And Chris, we have sliced this thing up about every way possible heading into this weekend, man. We've done that from our side, Chris, for you as a player, because you got to live conference championship weekend as someone who's won a Super Bowl with the New York Giants here. How difficult is it for a team that you've maybe seen before, in the case of the 49ers and the Rams in this one, and just having sitting around all this time to prepare and think about this game coming up this weekend at this time of year? How difficult is that from the player side of things?
Well, it's tough because you're just trying to go over the last second wrinkles that you're going to implement in the game plan. But ultimately, because it's a division rival, there are no state secrets. These two teams know each other. And so it's really about getting your mind right to try to take advantage of your individual matchup and just how that fits into the scheme or the plan that your head coach lays out for you throughout the course of the week. So that's really where you're going. Especially at this time, it's more of the mental preparation. It's just making sure that, you know, from that standpoint, you're ready to go out there and play your role, your part, and your team being able to get the dub. And so that's what's on the players' minds right now, man. And this is the time where you start thinking about the potential of winning a Super Bowl. It's just like, all right, nothing else matters. You're not worried about what your family is doing. You're not trying to kick it with your homeboys. This is about locking in, sacrificing all the free time that you have is devoted to game planning and watching film and making sure that you can be at your very best come Conference Championship Sunday.
That's what's on the line heading into this weekend for the players. For the rest of us, it's time to play a little game called Who You Got. Because we have looked at all these matchups, we'll give you some of the best matchups along the game that we'll see in the AFC round. But we got great players out here on both sides, a lot of them at the same positions with similar matchups here. So our producer Shannon Penn's going to run us through. We'll talk about who we think is going to have the bigger impact for their team this weekend. What do we got, Shannon?
All right, Chris, I will start with you. Who you got? Who will have a bigger impact, Deebo Samuel or Cooper Kupp?
Y'all want some of Deebo? That's what Kyle Shanahan is saying to Sean McVay and the L.A. Rams, and I don't think they really do. I mean, even though in the first two matchups in the regular season, Cooper Kupp had more touches, Deebo Samuel's won the touchdown battle 3-1, and Deebo just has so many more ways that he's going to get the football. We saw him score a rushing touchdown in their regular season matchups. We saw him score a receiving touchdown in their regular season matchups. He actually even threw a touchdown in the regular season finale against the Rams. So I think Deebo Samuel has a better chance of putting his imprint on this game and giving his team a better chance to win than Cooper Kupp. I know there's going to be a lot of passes because I don't anticipate the Rams being able to run the ball, but I got to believe that DeMeco Ryans understands Cooper Kupp is going to get his, but we just can't let him get into the end zone. I don't think that the Los Angeles Rams defense can stop Deebo from getting in the box.
Yeah, Chris, I'm going to go with you on this one, too, and say it's Deebo Samuel, and it's purely because of the volume of ways that he can impact the game. Like, for Cooper Kupp, both of these guys, remarkably similar players. During the regular season, only Jonathan Taylor had more scrimmage yards than these two players here. Even right now, for both of them, incredibly similar as receivers, they lead the league, Cooper Kupp first, Deebo Samuel second in the most yards after the catch this season. But you can put Deebo in the backfield. You can get him unique matchups with Kyle Shanahan. I think that's just going to trump in this case for such a player that's developed over the course of the season for that way. Love Cooper Kupp. I'm a rock with Deebo on this one. What's up next, Shan?
All right, let's stick with the wideouts, this time on the AFC side. All right, Mike, who you got? Who will have a bigger impact, Ja'Marr Chase or Tyreek Hill?
Man, this one's tough for me because statistically, Ja'Marr Chase has been what Tyreek Hill has been in the past seasons, right? We've seen Tyreek Hill limited as far as a big play receiver over the course of this season. They've taken away some of the teeth of what Kansas City does on offense. But Chris, if I'm looking back and using the past as protocol here for going forward, 266 yards given up to Ja'Marr Chase in that first game, I don't think that's going to happen again. I'll go Tyreek Hill on this one purely because he presents the most difficult matchup any defense can face. Pure, unadulterated speed at that position. We saw it show up against Buffalo in big-time moments. I think he shows up again against the Bengals in this moment.
Well, I'm going to go with Ja'Marr Chase, so we're on opposite sides on this one. And although Chase is not as fast as Tyreek Hill, He can hit that X button on defensive backs too. Like, this dude separates from everybody. It looks like he's moving at a different speed, and especially so in that Week 17 matchup they had against the Kansas City Chiefs. That secondary was left in the dust several times, including that 3rd and 27 that that Joe Burrow was able to convert to Ja'Marr Chase to set up the go-ahead field goal. So I look at this as Ja'Marr Chase being a better player in this. I would go out there to say this, Gojo. I think he's going to have a huge impact by dictating which way the coverage leans and opening up opportunities for other guys. But Ja'Marr Chase is going to get his. In the game against the divisional round against Tennessee, once that turnover happened by Ryan Tannehill at the end of it, everybody and their mama in that stadium knew who was getting the ball from Joe Burrow. It was Ja'Marr Chase. And he still found a way to get open and catch it and get out of bounds and preserve some clock. So I think Ja'Marr Chase has the bigger impact in this one. And Ja'Marr Chase has that other uncanny ability that Tyreek Hill doesn't. Ja'Marr Chase can play above the rim. If you throw it up there, he's going to go get it. Just from a size standpoint, he's a tough matchup for any of those defensive backs for the Chiefs.
It's so true, Chris. He's been sensational. He's been every bit of what we expected besides the preseason where he talked about the ring on the football being different and all that weird stuff. I will say this to your point about the Bengals and Tyreek Hill and what we saw. Week 17, the Bengals held him to 6 catches for 40 yards on 10 targets. Mm-hmm. One of just 2 times all year he was targeted 10 or more times and finished with fewer than 50 yards. It's going to have to be a different story this weekend if they want to get out of this game with a win. Canny and Golic Jr. here on your ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr., Chris Canny. Who you got in conference championship weekend? Shannon, who we got next?
All right, Mike, it's getting spicy. Who you got? Who will have a bigger impact this weekend, Nick Bosa or Aaron Donald?
So this one's always fun for me because it gets to pull out my favorite thing about Aaron Donald, which is his pass rush percentage against double teams, because it's always such a gross outlier in the NFL here. Almost every season, Aaron Donald and what he does facing a double team. I know he's an interior player, but almost 64% of the time, Chris, you couple that with his pass rush win rate, ESPN's metric that measures how quickly you beat the offensive line, how often you beat them in under 2.5 seconds. Aaron Donald wins versus double teams 23.1% of the time. Almost a quarter of the times he is double team on pass rushing downs, he's finding a way to bulldoze through that. He is an outlier. He is a space alien. I'm never going to go against 99 when given the choice.
No, and you shouldn't. And Aaron Donald's had a sack and a half in the last 2 games. So this dude is one of those guys that's always going to find ways to be around the quarterback and get him on the ground. Gojo, we were talking about it during the break. There are only 2 games where Aaron Donald did not have a quarterback hit all season long. That's just unbelievable to me. But I'm going to go with Nicky Bosa on this one, man. I'm going to go with Nicky Bosa having a bigger impact because I think it's a more of a drop-back game for the Rams. I don't necessarily see Kyle Shanahan wanting to give a whole lot of pass rush opportunities to that Rams defense just because he knows what Von Miller and Aaron Donald can do in the way of wrecking the game. And I also don't think he trusts his quarterback, Jimmy Garoppolo, not to throw the ball away. On the other side of that, I think Nicky Bosa and Eric Armstead find a way to be able to get after it. And because they don't have any issue with moving Nicky Bosa up and down the line, he's going to have some favorable matchups. It's going to be hard for that Rams offensive line to key in on him and double-team him. So I'm going to go with Nick Bosa having a bigger impact. Over the last 3 games, he's had 3 sacks. So I feel good about this guy having an opportunity to wreck the game for Matt Stafford and company.
All right, let's go to the last one here. Shannon, what do we got?
All right, who you got? Which coach will have a bigger impact, Chris? Kyle Shanahan or Sean McVay?
Kyle Shanahan has to have a bigger impact. Just because Kyle Shanahan has to do this without a quarterback. And I hate the Jimmy G slander, but, I mean, that's what it is. Jimmy G has not been great in the playoffs. Even in that Cowboys game, that early interception in the 4th quarter, you can't have that happen in a postseason game. And so he's going to have to manage his quarterback and make sure that he protects him all the while trying to be aggressive and scoring points because he knows who's on that other sideline and he knows the weapons that Matt Stafford has at his disposal. So this is a situation now where Kyle knows he's got to score around 30 points in order to get a win, and it's hard to feel good about Jimmy G being the catalyst for your offense being able to have that level of productivity. So I think Kyle Shanahan by far.
I'm with you, Chris. I'll go with Kyle Shanahan on this one also. I think of the two. We talked to Maurice Jones-Drew earlier. He's the one who hired Sean. It's all this student-teacher type stuff. I will say for Sean McVay, the challenge is going to be what he does late if they've got a lead, because we have seen at times both of these coaches make questionable decisions down the stretch. But Sean McVay in that Week 18 matchup turtled up, started running the ball a little bit too early, playing not to lose, and ended up letting the 49ers back into that game and back into the postseason. Those are some of the matchups. Those are some of the toss-ups heading into conference championship weekend. Coming up next, we'll look at one team that got a jump start on its offseason and maybe a jump start on some of the biggest pressure points that they're going to face as a focal point next season. That's next here, Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr., Chris Canty, coming up in about 10 minutes. Take a walk down to Cincinnati and check in the blood pressure. See how one of the Queen Cities is doing heading into championship weekend in the NFL. But Chris, the Dallas Cowboys just continue to be the gift that keeps on giving, because as we heard the reports yesterday from our own Ed Werder that Mike McCarthy was going to head back to Big D and be the head coach for another season, that Dan Quinn, their defensive coordinator, was also going to be coming back for another year, Jerry Jones decided to finally step to the mic. We hadn't heard much from the Dallas Cowboys owner on the future of his head coach, on the rumors about Sean Payton, the newly retired Saints head coach, who had plenty of experience in Dallas, who Jerry Jones is very fond of. And so Jerry Jones was on 105.3 The Fan doing his weekly hit and was asked about the expectation for the team and if anything changes knowing that Sean Payton is out there.
Not at all. And the rationale, I mean, I think a lot of Sean. There's going to be somebody other than Sean win the Super Bowl this year. And if he doesn't coach, it'll be somebody other than Sean win the Super Bowl next year. My point is, you win Super Bowls and people win Super Bowls. There's nobody, no one person indispensable as far as winning the Super Bowl is concerned.
Holy word salad, Batman, Chris. That sounded like the most roundabout way of trying to avoid the topic that he knows is going to be at the forefront. And I think, Chris, the fact that he didn't come out and really outright stamp anything out in this situation and dispel any of the rumors that we know are going to be out there lets me know everything I need to know about just what a daunting task Mike McCarthy has this season.
Yeah, he's going to go into 2022 on one of the hottest seats of any coach in the NFL, and for good reason, because with the talent that the Cowboys had going into this postseason, you wouldn't think that they would get ousted by a team that had to fight for their playoff lives in Week 18, but that's exactly what happened. Now, I think as we get a little further removed from that and the 49ers find themselves in the championship game, that wild card loss doesn't look as bad, but the question still remains on whether or not Mike McCarthy is capable of taking a team to the Super Bowl that doesn't have an MVP caliber quarterback. That's the question that everybody around the NFL wants to answer. That's the question that Jerry Jones once answered. Now, the Cowboys, they had a good season, but when you kind of dive into it and look a little deeper into the numbers, you're talking about a team that went 6-0 in a weak NFC East. All other teams there 6-5. When it comes to wins against teams that are over 500 outside of the division, you're only talking about three games. There was only three wins against teams over 500 outside of the division. So you would expect that your coach would be a little better in that regard when it comes to quality competition, because those are the teams that you're ultimately going to be competing against in order to get to the Super Bowl and have a chance to win a Lombardi. So I'm sure Jerry Jones wants to see a lot of improvement in his Cowboys team from a consistency standpoint. We saw that with the defense in the second half, but we've got to see more growth and evolution on the offensive side of the ball, because they became predictable and that unit became stagnant in the biggest games of the season, and that just can't happen.
Yeah, and Chris, we know the difficulty with all this is going to be, I think, on multiple fronts, internal and external, because you talked about coming over to the Dallas Cowboys and the difficulty in that locker room when you had Jason Garrett as the offensive coordinator hired before Wade Phillips, the head coach, and the difficulty you have voices on that front. So you've got, on one side, Jerry Jones being asked questions about Mike McCarthy's comfort, Dan Quinn coming back here, a guy everyone liked, a guy that got a bunch of head coaching interviews this offseason. Then we got the Sean Payton factor that I thought got an interesting bit of steam picked up on it. Because, listen, Sean Payton is a very smart guy. Sean Payton is a guy who we think is also going to be involved doing TV work this year if he's not coaching a team. And he said he has no plans of coaching during the 2022 season. So we'd imagine he's going to do something to stay close to the game. He got a great head start on both this and apparently lighting a little bit of flame under all these offseason rumors when he joined the Dan Patrick Show today and was asked about the Dallas Cowboys and what they could have done better in that very famous 14-second, two-minute drill at the end of the game. This is what he had to say on DP earlier.
So then ask me the end of the Cowboys game, and let me see if I can do this better.
Okay. What did the Cowboys do wrong in this situation?
Well, look, they're trying to get in field. They're trying to get in touchdown range, and they ran a draw. We typically would throw a pass and down. Ultimately, I think two more steps for Dak. He's got to slide a little quicker. He's up. Ball has to go to the umpire. Then let's go. We can never hand the ball to the center.
Just incredible. And now I know at the beginning of that, let me see if I can do it better. I think he may have been answering the question again, Chris, but everything about this already sounds like it's dripped in a public job interview for the Cowboys job going into next season.
Yeah, let me show you the point of difference when it comes to what the Cowboys currently have versus what they could have in a year or two from now. That's essentially what Sean Payton did on the Dan Patrick Show, because he gave you the two things that he would have made sure to emphasize to his quarterback coming off of a dead ball. First of all, we can move it a lot quicker by throwing it than you running it. So let's start with that. Even if it's going to be a play that's directed toward the middle of the field, we're going to throw it to a receiver. That receiver is going to get down. And then once he pops up, hand the ball to the umpire so he can spot the ball so play can start, and then you can clock it and try to have a shot at the end zone. He gave you the blueprint. He gave you the game plan as far as being able to make sure you get a shot at the end zone. And what makes that situation worse, Gojo, is the fact that Mike McCarthy, even now, still defends what they did from a play call standpoint and then how they tried to get the ball lined up for the umpire to spot it. It just seems utterly ridiculous. Everybody knows that it should have been done better. The execution should have been better. But that's an indictment on the coaching when your players aren't prepared for those moments. And so I think that's one of those things that's going to stick in Jerry Jones' mind throughout the offseason. And then the first time that pops up in 2022, the clock management being an issue or timeout management being an issue, Jerry Jones is going to go back to all the bad feels that he had over the past couple of weeks while he was canceling media appointments. And he's going to say, you know what? I've got to pivot. This is not working with Mike McCarthy. It'll be three seasons, and he hadn't delivered what he promised me when he took the job, which is a championship.
All that context certainly not doing him any favors. And Jerry Jones not coming out and I think doing a good enough job of throwing support behind Mike McCarthy if that was something that he wanted to do. We can take that message and understand it's going to be a long year for the Dallas Cowboys with all of this in mind.
Support or pressure, Gojo, just depends on how you look at it.
Amen. Amen, amen, I do believe. That is what's the stake for the Dallas Cowboys heading into this offseason and heading into 2022. Coming up next, though, let's head to Cincinnati and find out just how much they're feeling and enjoying the underdog role they've carried through this postseason. How's that going to translate in Arrowhead? We'll get to that after this word from Wendy's. Right now, guys, at Wendy's, come see what all the hype's about with their new guaranteed hot and crispy fries. Real, natural-cut potatoes, perfectly sprinkled in sea salt, and guaranteed to be hot and crispy down to the very last fry. Or they'll replace them. These aren't just the typical fries you add to a meal. No, no, no. These are fries worth adding a meal to. So abandon the old, cold, and soggy, which, man, is a gross way to describe fries, and head to Wendy's today where your fries are guaranteed to be hot and crispy. At participating U.S. Wendy's, back with Ben Baby from Cincinnati next on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
It's grim, be the grim reaper. And go get it. Go get it.
Mahomes throwing left, caught, touchdown, just that easy to Travis Kelce.
We definitely don't want to lose to the same team twice. That'll give you a long offseason to think about.
Burrow out of the shotgun is going to go deep right for Chase. He's got it! Touchdown, Cincinnati!
Oh, that one was fun.
Whenever it seems improbable, you know that Joe Burrow and the weapons around him are going to do something.
We got Grim Reaper quotes. We got swaggy kickers. The AFC Championship game is a matchup that top to bottom, really interesting because of some of the key pieces involved. Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio, Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. The quarterbacks are going to be the headliner, but Chris, you and I talked about some of the matchups elsewhere. Wide receiver, certainly along the defensive line. A lot of interesting stuff. And so for more on that, and just the state of the fan base, let's head out to the hotline to talk to ESPN Bengals reporter Ben Baby, who joins us now. And Ben, just starting there, we've heard so much about the underdog stuff, really, for the Bengals since they got in this postseason. What's the mindset of the fan base and just the local area there right now heading into yet another underdog matchup?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. Joe Burrow made it a point before the game against Tennessee. There was the mentality of, oh, why not us? And Burrow quickly put that to bed in the final team meeting, and the team captains did, as they spoke to the team before they played Tennessee. They basically said they're not about that anymore. They didn't like the mentality, the passiveness that came with that, that feeling that they might be lucky to be here. Burrow has been adamant that this is a really good team, and they deserve to be playing Kansas City in this AFC title game, if not playing for a Super Bowl. And that just goes to show you the mindset that he has, despite being a second-year quarterback, a guy coming off a devastating left knee injury, was named today by the Pro Football Writers of America as the comeback player of the year. The city has taken on that mentality as well, and they've believed that confidence that Burrow has, you know, I think will serve them well going into Sunday's game. But it will be a tough task for them, being 7-point underdogs against a team that has been to the Super Bowl in each of the last two seasons.
Ben, and this should be a confident group. I get what Joe Burrow is saying. This team has won back-to-back playoff games, and they find themselves in the conference championship game. But I'm curious, from what you've heard from the players in that locker room, how much confidence are they drawing from that Week 17 win that they had over the Kansas City Chiefs this time around?
Yeah, I think that win is huge. And for them, that was a moment where they learned that they could really play with any team in the NFL. And they've had glimpses of that throughout the regular season. You know, they gave Green Bay a really tough game at home, and they beat Baltimore twice handily, you know, the first time when they had a full complement of players, including quarterback Lamar Jackson. And I think that Kansas City win and the manner that they were going to go out and do it, you know, head coach Zach Taylor wanted to, if you remember in that game, he went for it on fourth down a couple times and really wanted to win the game convincingly with a touchdown. Didn't work out that way. They ended with the field goal. But he said, you got to go out and take it. And that mentality has definitely been there. And for them to win that way, I think definitely gave them a big psychological boost. And they've been playing that way as well, if you exclude the game in which they rested their starters in Week 18 because they had clinched the North already. The Bengals have won five straight games dating back to the regular season. So it's a team playing really, really well, and they're definitely hot at the right time.
Canty and Golic Jr. talking to ESPN Bengals reporter Ben Baby on the hotline. We know injury on both sides, certainly for the Chiefs. They're keeping an eye on Tyrann Mathieu, his status, which could be a huge factor for this Bengals passing attack. Ben, as we get closer now to Sunday, any injury updates on the Bengals sideline that are going to be noteworthy heading into this one?
Yeah, the biggest one, I think, and it's, you know, Cam Sample, their rotational defensive end, a rookie. He's probably not going to play. He's doubtful with a groin injury. Stanley Morgan, a good blocking wide receiver for them, a hamstring injury, also doubtful. But aside from that, you know, the Bengals have to be pretty happy. They're relatively healthy. You know, Tyrann Mathieu is officially listed as questionable with a concussion. However, he did practice full on Thursday and Friday, so that is a very good sign that he'll be available for that Kansas City defense. So I think both teams, all things considered at this point in the year, have to be thrilled with a kind of where they're at from a health perspective, and we should see two teams about as close to full strength as you can be when you talk about playing this late in the season.
Ben, Bengals defensive coordinator Lou Anarumo made some waves this weekend, this week, obviously, with talking about holding the Kansas City Chiefs to 3 points in the red zone as opposed to letting those guys score touchdowns. Now, in the second half of their game in the regular season, they held Kansas City to only a field goal in two quarters. So did you see anything in that second half, any adjustments that defense made that they can potentially replicate this time around against the Chiefs?
Yeah, I think, you know, the big thing is you want to try to basically take away all the deep throws that from Patrick Mahomes, and you're willing to give up everything underneath. And Kansas City was more than willing to take what the Bengals were going to give them. You know, when you look at Patrick Mahomes' air yards per attempt in the second half, definitely lower than what we're used to seeing out of a guy as prolific as him. And you know, the Kansas City only had three drives that entire half, if you go back and look at it. Two of them were punts, and then that 11-play drive they had in the fourth quarter, the only time they touched the ball it stalled out when Lou Anarumo brought a zero blitz, kind of caught Patrick Mahomes off guard, and Kansas City was forced to kick a field goal, and they never got the ball back for the final 6:01. Lou said that, you know, he feels that he's got a lot of confidence that they're able to replicate that kind of performance, which is a tough thing to ask, especially when you look at how well Kansas City is playing. And I asked him kind of what gives him that confidence, and he said, you know, the ability to capitalize on those turnover opportunities. The Bengals felt like they had a couple interceptions they dropped in that first game, and Lou said that, you know, we won't survive if we don't do that. And the Bengals have 5 turnovers in 2 games, and is really, if we want to look at it, I think that's the main reason why this team is currently playing for an AFC title.
And certainly we know this Kansas City team struggled with turnovers through the early portion of this season. Maybe some of that turnover luck bounces back in the Bengals' way this weekend. Ben, we appreciate the time, man. Enjoy the game this weekend. I'm sure the city of Cincinnati is going to be at an absolute fever pitch heading into Sunday.
Yeah, thank y'all for having me. I appreciate it.
ESPN Bengals reporter Ben Baby, kind enough to join us, getting ready for that AFC Championship matchup this weekend. Coming up next, we'll get you ready, though, diving on the field, trying to figure out what the Chiefs can do to change the tide from that Week 17 matchup that they lost to Cincinnati. Next, here on ESPN Radio.
They said we were nuts back in the fall of 1979, saying that all sports 24 hours a day would make it on TV. And now you say we're nuts trying to start ESPN Radio? We're dead serious. We know you like us on TV, and if you do, you'll love us on radio.
30 years and counting. This is ESPN Radio. This is ESPN Radio.
Ben Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. Our thanks to Ben Baby, our ESPN Bengals reporter, for joining us, catching us up on what to expect in the AFC Championship game this weekend. We'll get some matchups on the field we really like here, but Chris, my favorite matchup off the field through this playoff so far for the Bengals has been our ESPN Radio host Jason Fitz against Sports Nation's very own Jordan Cornette. Jason Fitz, lifelong diehard Raiders fan. Jordan Cornette, Cincinnati Bengals fan who has been feeling himself, and rightly so. And Chris, this rivalry went to song. For anyone unfamiliar, Jason Fitz spent 7 years as the fiddle player in the band Perry. He's a singer, he's a songwriter, he's got all that in the repertoire. And so when they first had that matchup on Wild Card Weekend, Jason Fitz essentially wrote a piano-tuned diss track for the Cincinnati Bengals. It went so well that the Bengals bounced his Raiders from the playoffs. He thought, Jordan Cornette did, that he might get Fitz on his side. Instead, Jason has written a song in favor of every team that's gone up against them in the postseason. Jason's from Nashville, so he wrote a Titans diss track for the Cincinnati Bengals. And now, heading into this matchup with the Chiefs, Jason Fitz decided to go one more time anti-Bengals to keep with tradition heading into the AFC Championship. Here it is.
Oh, hey, Jordan. Everybody knows that I'm a Raiders fan. In a game like this, well, I should be a Bengals stan. But I'm gonna troll you now, cause that's the kind of friend I am. And maybe it's part of a master plan. Cause the Chiefs are gonna tomahawk chop your season away. Hey, yeah, yeah, yeah. Gonna leave you crying in your skyline chilly today. Hey, yeah, yeah, yeah. Cause everything that you have loved will sure come crashing down. The Chiefs are gonna barbecue some Bengal in their town.
First
that's
off,
gold.
We give Fitz a lot of grief on this show for being fitter player and starting fights everywhere. The dude's ridiculously talented. That was hilarious, Chris.
Oh, man. The part where he said the Chiefs are going to tomahawk your top your season away. Hilarious.
So Jordan Cornette will join Spain and Fitz tonight at 7:30 p.m. Eastern. I'm sure to spread more Bengals propaganda and maybe see it. I don't know if Jordan Cornette's got a musical bone in his body, but at this point, he's got to just let it keep going this way because, Chris, whatever they've been doing, that underdog mentality that we know Joe Burrow does not buy into for that team, it has worked so far. Let's see if it'll work this weekend here. Renee, play the music. Thank you. Dramatic pause here.
No doubt.
All right. The AFC matchup for the championship game, if you will, Renee.
Bengals at Chiefs.
I don't know why he's saying it so fast here. We've done music today. Let's do matchups now, Chris. What do you like so far? Let's start off with the Bengals offense going up against the Chiefs defense this weekend. What are you looking at? What are you watching for?
I'm watching for the matchup between L'Jarius Sneed, the corner, for the Kansas City Chiefs versus T. Higgins, the number two wide receiver for the Cincinnati Bengals. And listen, everybody and their mama knows that Steve Spagnuolo is not going to let Ja'Marr Chase go off 11 catches, 266, and three touchdowns. It's just not going to happen. So the field is going to tilt in the direction of number one for the Bengals. That means a lot of one-on-one coverage opportunities for Lajarius Sneed, and can he hold up against a big play receiver like T. Higgins? We know T. Higgins can get down. He's a 1,000-yard receiver under the age of 25. The Bengals are the first outfit to have 2,000-yard receivers, a 1,000-yard rusher, and a 4,000-yard passer under the age of 26 years old. So this is one of those situations where I'm not sure that the number two corner for the Chiefs can hold up. And then after watching what Gabriel Davis did in the AFC Championship game, how could you not love T. Higgins going into this matchup?
It's so true. That was a terrifying show. I am still thinking about that route that he put on Mike Hughes and what it might have done to his psyche going forward. So, yeah, Chris, great call there. T. Higgins been a sensation this year, the former Clemson wideout. I'm going to go at running back here. I want to watch Joe Mixon versus Willie Gay and Nick Bolton in that linebacker group. Because, Chris, you look over the last few weeks, we know the high-flying attack for them. Joe Mixon is a receiver in his past four games. 23 receptions, 189 yards, and a touchdown in these games here. He could be a guy coming out of the backfield. We know what he'll do in the run game. But, Chris, as the field gets deeper, we know a lot of these spread offenses, a lot of these air raid themes end up getting the running backs matched up with guys in space, giving them hell in the process here. So that is when we've got the Cincinnati Bengals on offense. But, Chris, we know the biggest spot I at least think this game is going to be different and tougher for the Cincinnati Bengals is when Kansas City and Patrick Mahomes gets the ball. So when the other team is on offense here in the Chiefs, who do you like and what's the matchup you're looking towards?
I was tempted to go Sam Hubbard on this one, Gojo, going up against Andrew Wiley, a guy that's a guard by trade but filled in and playing right tackle for him because you're going to have to put pressure on Pat Mahomes. But I didn't go that direction. Instead, I'm going to run it back with Travis Kelce matching up against Von Bell, strong safety for the Cincinnati Bengals. Von Bell is a dog, for those of you that don't know. And this is the second week in a row you're talking about the Kansas City Chiefs offense going up against a defense led by two outstanding safeties in Jesse Bates III and Von Bell. But Von Bell is going to be the one that's responsible for being able to lock up Travis Kelce. He'll have some help with the underneath coverage, but how that matchup goes will determine a long ways whether or not the Chiefs' offense is going to be able to consistently put together drives. Gojo, I don't think it's going down like that. Their defensive coordinator for the Bengals, I think he's got a plan on how he's going to limit the touches for Travis Kelce. And if you shut off the faucet with him, then it's hard for it's going to be hard for some of those other guys to step up. If you can take care of Travis Kelce, I think you got a really good chance at being able to keep this Chiefs' offense under 30 points.
Yeah, it's so true, Chris. I think you look back historically for the Chiefs over this run since Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce started linking up. He's always been the key. Disrupting him at the line of scrimmage, trying to get him out of the flow in this game has been a massive part of all of this. I'm going to look elsewhere in that receiving group because we know Tyreek Hill, kind of the point of the spear alongside Travis Kelce. I want to go that next layer down. Byron Pringle and that matchup, whether it's against Mike Hilton in the slot, Eli Apple on the outside here, Chris. Byron Pringle, and I saw this courtesy of Cynthia Freeland over at the NFL Network, has three touchdown passes on fewer than 10 air yards in the Chiefs' past seven games, generating a 129.2 passer rating on such throws over that time. That's the second best in the NFL in that span with those who have 20 or more targets here. He's low and slow like a brisket around the line of scrimmage and been able to get out there in space because you got to worry about all those other guys out there, the other fast guys we just mentioned as well.
No doubt about it. And the one thing that you know that this Bengals defense is going to do is major in a lot of zone coverage, and it's going to be a lot of that cover three, cover four. And so that's going to create opportunities for one-on-one with those receivers out there on the edges. And so those guys are going to have to step up. Byron Pringle is going to have opportunities. He's shown himself to be a red zone threat of late as well. So that other corner, whoever that ends up being matched up on Byron Pringle, is going to have to step up in a big way.
So those are big-time matchups that we're getting ready to watch as the Bengals take on the Chiefs in the AFC Championship game this weekend. Plenty of stuff on field to keep an eye on with the guys that are going to decide the outcome of all this. But coming up next, as we look at the great coaching matchups we've got this weekend, everyone's eyes are drawn to Sean McVay and Kyle Shanahan. And the question that gets asked is, what does it say about Sean McVay if the Niners go for 7 in a row against the Rams next?
Thanks for listening to Canty and Golic Jr., the podcast. You can check the guys out live weekday afternoons at 4 Eastern on ESPN Radio and on ESPN+.